It is a wonder and a mystery that our paths have crossed, that in the immensity of time and the vastness of space, we coincide here. I am in awe at the ways in which our lives intersect and intertwine, at the beauty we create when we gather. May our coming together make us more compassionate, more just, more caring, and more loving. May our eyes, our hearts, and minds be open to this offering. I am so glad that you're here. Let us worship. Let us marvel at the miracle of being here, right now, in the mystery that has brought us together.
Welcome all. I'm Reverend Bob LaValle, and I'd like to give a special welcome to the person you just saw speak, Reverend Tanya Marquez. Our senior minister, Reverend Angela Herrera, is on sabbatical until June 1st. And while she's away, we'll be bringing in guest preachers from all over the country, such as Reverend Tanya. Reverend Tanya Marquez is the assistant minister of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of San Diego. She's also a group leader for an organization I love, the UU College of Social Justice. Reverend Tanya has lived most of her life in the border region, and her Fronteriza experience has greatly influenced her ministry. We're so glad you're here today, Reverend Tanya. And in addition to Reverend Tanya Marquez, I'm delighted to be joined today by our music director, Susan Peck, and our worship leader, Raven Reed. And our DJ today is Dan Small. Our tech team is Chris Paul, Raymond Wolfgang, Bill Miller, Vance Bass, and our new ushers, Erica and Alex Johnson Jimenez. Thank you all so much for making it happen.
Last fall, more than 35 members of First U participated in the Beloved Conversations program offered through Meadville Lombard Theological School. Meadville is offering a new session this spring, and registration is open now. The content of the spring session will be all new, so prior participants are encouraged to take the program again. This program offers meditations on race and ethnicity and uses a variety of learning modes like large group meaning-making sessions, small group learning pods, and individual study. For more information, check out this week's broadsheet. A link to the broadsheet is in the chat bar. If you have more questions about the content, email Reverend Bob at blavalle@uuabq.org.
I invite you now to light your chalices with us. Symbol of the sacred space created by our coming together. May its light illuminate our minds, open our hearts, and remind us of the warmth of this community we create together.
Good morning. Will you join me in singing, please? Gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power. power. Spirit, draw near. Spirit, draw near. Spirit, draw near.
Hi, my name is Esme Maxson. Today we're going to do the church proclamation. We are Unitarian, we are Universalists. We are people of open minds, loving hearts, and helping hands.
Two, one, two, clap.
My hands are strong enough, they're strong enough, and I'm good enough. My hands are strong enough to give love. I know that I'm
my arms are strong enough.
Let us pause the chat for a few moments during our meditation and prayer. And before we move into a couple of minutes of silence, I invite you to join me in a responsive reading written by the Reverend Erica Hewitt and the Reverend Susan Frederick Gray. When, after each of my statements, you will respond with, "No one is outside the circle of love." We know that hurt moves through the world, perpetrated by action, inaction, and indifference. Our values call us to live in the reality of the heartbreak of our world, remembering that no one is outside the circle of love. We who are Unitarian Universalists not only affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person, we also affirm the inherent wholeness of every being, despite apparent brokenness. No one is outside the circle of love. We know that things break or break down, promises, friendship, sobriety, hope, communication. This breaking happens because our human hearts and our very institutions are frail and imperfect. We make mistakes. Life is messy. Still, no one is outside the circle of love. With compassion as our guide, we seek the well-being of all people. We seek to dismantle systems of oppression that undermine our collective humanity. We believe that we're here to guide one another toward love. No one is outside the circle of love. No matter how fractured we are or once were, we can make whole people of ourselves. We are whole at our core because of the great, unnameable, sometimes inconceivable love in which we live. No one is outside the circle of love. And now, holding these words in your heart, in your mind, I invite you into 2 minutes of silence.
An old saying goes that a burden shared is halved and a joy shared is multiplied. Our community is strengthened when we help each other bear our burdens as well as celebrate our joys. Please use the chat bar to share what is on your heart and to support others as they share what is on theirs. If you are not able to write in the chat bar, please contact the church office or send an email to caring@uuabq.org. The video will prompt us first to share our joys and then our concerns.
We share our joys and concerns. We journey together as a loving community. We see each other. We see the joy of Black History Month, although every month is Black History Month. And bluebirds and nature friends and the signs of spring. And we see the joy of appreciating the simple things we have, the basics like food and shelter. And we give thanks for a successful board retreat for our new board, for board of directors at First Unitarian for 2021, and all the folks who will be working so hard trying to be stewards of this amazing organization. And we hold up the sorrows. We hold up those who are grieving or hurting for their pets. They truly are members of the family. And we think of Sharon as she faces an operation, and Susan's mother, Betty. We lift up with deep fatigue and deep hurt for all those still struggling from COVID and all the things that make it worse, those struggling with addiction and mental illness. We remember those at the border who are waiting for safety, security, for justice. And we lift up our concerns about climate change and the drought here in New Mexico and how that might possibly change us. We see our joys and concerns, and the joys and concerns held in our hearts that are keenly felt, even if they are unspoken. All these we lift up to the great powers of celebration and healing and renewal that are known by many names. We pray today with the words of Reverend Elizabeth Buki, who serves our sibling congregation in Jamaica Plain, Boston. When the cold of isolation spreads over our lives, we reach out our hearts for one another. When we are lost and hope is gone, we teach each other to go on and to do the next right thing. When selfishness is all too attractive, we remind each other how to put someone else's needs above our own. When oppression restricts our power, we help each other to step into it and to grow into something new. Although society tells us to conceal and not feel, we melt our frozen hearts with the power of love. May we all be held in the heart of love. Peace be with you.
Cuando el pobre nada tiene un reparte, cuando algo en paso sal y agua nos da, cuando el débil a su hermano fortalece, va Dios mismo en nuestro mismo camino, va Dios mismo. When the goodness poured from heaven fills our dwelling.
I believe in the power of words to help us see the invisible. One of my favorite anecdotes about the power of words is when I was teaching Spanish at a community college, and when I corrected my students' translation of community college from colegio comunitario to universidad comunitaria. Of course, that comes from the fact that in Spanish-speaking countries, the concept of community college doesn't exist. After high school, students go to a university. The sudden realization that they were indeed taking university-level classes was priceless. It transformed how they saw themselves and how they understood the work they were doing, right? Because you've probably heard debates about why a university is better than a community college. And I am sure that you have your own stories about words that have transformed or impacted your lives because they offer a reframing and answer you were seeking, or just the ability to name something you had noticed, but for which you had no word to describe it. I have had several of those throughout my life. Words that have allowed me to move forward in life, that have unstuck me from a difficult place, or that have opened the door to possibility. So there are words that can suddenly reshape our relationship to the world in both a positive and or a negative way. Today, I'll introduce a word that may be new to many of you, but let me give you some background and context first. One day, a couple of years ago, in a meeting with my spiritual director, I had a sudden realization. I had been sharing for years my story of a time I moved to Mexico City to study theology, that it was during the period of time that marked the beginning of my journey to leave the Catholic faith. And I had always shared about my feeling out of place and losing my faith, but always left something out. I hadn't shared that I didn't have the money to pay for college. To go to Mexico, I had worked hard for a year and I had saved all my money to pay for my first semester of classes, to pay for housing. But once there, it didn't take me long to realize that I was not going to be able to work and pay for school in Mexico. The university was a private and expensive institution and I had no scholarships. Most of the scholarships were given to the seminarians and the nuns attending the school, and I was neither. Now, I didn't share that information because I had already internalized the many messages I received growing up about being poor. They are so hard to escape. Turn on the television and you see how people are portrayed in movies and series. Success is wrapped up in nice clothes, purchasing power, etc. Poverty is pervasively presented as a flaw of the individual. Forget about housing costs, low wages. Maybe you've been there already and you know this really well. It is incredibly expensive to be poor because being poor is systematically understood as a flaw in character. Those with less resources are often hit with higher interest rates, higher penalties, and higher prices when they can't afford to pay wholesale or bulk prices for the items they need. Maybe you never thought of your Costco card and your Costco purchases as privilege, but they are. But many of the penalties and high prices of housing, schools, and services are so in order to keep those with less purchasing power away. It is a form of segregation. But we still love, though, the stories of the one who makes it, who overcomes all adversity and becomes a millionaire. And our culture uses that narrative as proof that the same possibility exists for all. And those who don't make it so far didn't work hard enough. Poverty is not having the freedom to choose. I don't think anyone ever told me that I was supposed to feel shame for not having money and for not being able to pay my way through a private university. I don't think anyone had such conversation with me, but it was not necessary. I had already been acculturated to just know that. It just took paying attention to the way women with food vouchers are looked at to the annoyance people feel when they find out that they're behind someone who has week vouchers or food vouchers to pay for their food. Women who don't have to put up with dirty looks for comments about how long they take have moved their purchases to some specialized stores where they don't have to deal with this staring from people. The way people talked about how panhandling was a great way to get money. There was a story not long ago about a panhandler at the border who posted a picture of himself eating lobster in the tourist town of Puerto Nuevo. And the divided comments about whether he was entitled to such a meal or not. I learned to doubt the ability of a homeless person to make good choices and to offer them food instead of money. In other words, the poor in our communities are often treated paternalistically and as an inconvenience. Most cities have anti-homeless laws that prohibit people from sitting or sleeping on streets or on certain streets or sleeping in their cars. And when we talk about people living in poverty, we can name tangible and intangible things like house, car, money, resources, dignity. And as we name them, we can see them and understand them. But while I can point to the tangible items and you'll understand them, there are more abstract concepts that require a little more. They are unseen and ideological. And when it comes to ideology, in the words of Adela Cortina, a Spanish philosopher and ethicist, ideology, the more silent it is, the more effective, because it can't even be denounced. It distorts reality by hiding it. The ideology Cortina is pointing out is not new, has been noted by many throughout history. It was noted by the theologians who created the theology of liberation. It was noted by thinkers and activists, by the same people at the center of it, the poor. Every year, Fundeo, a nonprofit organization for the use of Spanish, chooses the word of the year. Many of the nominated words have to do with technology and the new language it creates. But in 2017, the word of the year was one coined by Adela Cortina, a word she's been using since the 1990s, but that in today's world acquired a more urgent need for it. According to Fundeo, the word was chosen because of its transformational power. And the word is aporofobia, and it means rejection of the poor or fear of poverty. For Cortina, there's an urgency to name the rejection of the poor, of the destitute, because that attitude is strong in social life, and it's even worse because it functions from a place of anonymity. Precisely because its undisputable reality has not been recognized, it cannot be deactivated. In her book by the same name, Adela Cortina argues that at the center of this rejection of the poor lies the understanding that the poor don't have anything to offer. The poor is the one that is left outside the possibility of giving something back in a world based on the game of giving and receiving. In this sense, they don't have a choice. Cortina felt the need to create a word that could describe a reality she and others had long noticed. And the rise of conservative governments in our country and in other parts of the world at the time that called for sometimes inhumane measures against refugees and immigrants, she points out, is not just because of xenophobia. Foreigners are not feared merely for being from another country. And it doesn't mean that xenophobia isn't real. But the point Cortina makes really clear is that there's a rejection of foreigners who are poor. Those who have money to spend are always welcomed. The investors, the business owners, those who are famous too. But the ones who are perceived as in need, those are the ones being rejected. Activists and human rights advocates have for a long time called attention to the increasing wealth gap in our country. The richer getting more so and the poorer getting poorer. The current pandemic has deepened this gap as we see working communities and communities of color being hit the hardest by the pandemic. But aporophobia also means fear of poverty. And most of us would fear poverty because we know we have seen how the poor are treated. the lack of access to healthcare, education, adequate housing, food, and other services. This pandemic, for example, for those who were already struggling meant being exposed to the virus versus being exposed to hunger and homelessness. In fact, food insecurity has increased during this pandemic. In New Mexico, it was projected that 21% of the population would experience food insecurity in 2020. What makes it difficult to deal with these complex issues like poverty and its impact on people and community is that because they are not easy to resolve, it's easy for people to look away, to become numb, or they're just not simply paying attention because those issues are not impacting them or their communities directly. And words are powerful. A word can make us pause and reconsider our understanding of what we see as real. They can make us see things differently. And that matters because we can only truly change what we can see and understand. When I first heard the word aportofobia, it made a lot of sense to me. It's not an easy word, and it makes it even more difficult because of the reality that it's pointing to. But it has invited me to reflect on the ways in which I perpetuate this ideology with the choices I make, with the words I use. What we have before us, what this word challenges us to do, is to reconsider how we understand the world and what role each of us play in perpetuating invisible ideologies that otherwise we would condemn. The good news is that if we can see it and understand it, then it is easier to pay attention to our ways of being, to our interactions, to the way we construct reality with our words and actions. Think about our story for all ages today. How would you have responded to CJ's questions if that would have been you? With the same compassion, care, and finding the beautiful like his grandmother? Cortina reminds us, and I quote, "The isolated individual doesn't exist, only humans in relationship with one another. The worst punishment to be given is that of condemning someone to invisibility, to rejection and contempt, and to ignore the existence of the other." This is not news to us. Our Unitarian Universalist faith invites us to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And her commentary also affirms our human interdependence. We are already connected, not by nationality, not by social status, not by any agreements we have between us. We were connected before we even knew it, by our shared humanity. So, if harmful ideologies thrive on invisibility, bringing them to light can be the beginning of transformation for individuals and community. If the worst punishment is to condemn people to invisibility, we can begin to heal the wounds in our communities by affirming their existence and recognizing that we are already connected to each other by our shared humanity. The power of a word is that it can make the invisible visible. It can point to hidden concepts and ideologies. And yes, there's a lot of work to do. Aporophobia is only one of the many harmful attitudes and ideologies present in our world today. But I believe that when we find the words to name them, to make them visible, we then truly have the opportunity to raise our awareness and work on creating more compassionate and just communities, to face the evils of society with courage, to transform our relationship with others and with the world, to commit to the work of building a world where really no one is outside the circle of love. May it be so.
Last Sunday, during our annual meeting, we voted to choose the 2021 recipients of our Change for the Future program. Starting today, this quarter's recipient is the American Civil Liberties Union of New Mexico. The ACLU of New Mexico protects and advances justice, liberty, and equity as guaranteed by the constitutions of New Mexico and the United States. It is especially focused on groups that have been historically disenfranchised. You can make an offering online by clicking on the link that we'll put in the chat box. And if you prefer not to give online, you can always simply mail a check to the church and include Change for the Future in the memo line. Now let us exercise the enduring power of generosity.
There is a balm in Gilead to make the wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. Sometimes I feel discouraged and think my work's in vain. But then the Holy Spirit revives my soul again. There is a balm in Gilead to make the to heal the sin-sick soul.
What is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of the ACLU of New Mexico, and thank you on behalf of First Unitarian Church. So we're approaching the end of our service, and I want to remind folks that if you'd like to stay on and chat with your sibling congregants, just stay till the end of the credits and we'll place you in a breakout room. And here's a little starter for your conversations, either in the breakout rooms or at home. I invite you to ask yourselves, have you ever experienced aporophobia and how? Have you ever experienced aporophobia and how? And maybe we felt it. Maybe we were the recipient of it. How did it show up? Let's bring Tanya on.
As we extinguish our chalices to mark the closing of this gathering, receive this blessing. This blessing has traveled far. It has moved through mountains and valleys and through time. It has shown up in the joyful presence of friends and loved ones, in the comforting presence of those who have held your pain, in the compassionate guidance of mentors, teachers, and guides, in phone calls, emails, and texts, in the companions you have found on this journey. It shows up in the eyes of children and the future they reflect, in the tireless work of those who dream incessantly a new world. It moves with the human spirit, eager to know, eager to feel, eager for wholeness. Show no resistance. Let this blessing come and reign over you. It has been looking for you. It is glad to have found you. Amen, and blessed be.